This is Chapter a Day. I'm Michelle Good, and I'm reading from Lady Cop Makes Trouble by Amy Stewart, published by Mariner Books in 2017. When we left off, there's an inquest being conducted on Sheriff Heath over the escape of one of his prisoners, Baron von Matthiasis. The fugitive made the escape while being guarded by Constance, but the general public doesn't know this. The sheriff is taking the blame because he feels that it's his responsibility. Cordelia Heath, the sheriff's wife, has taken all that she can and has left the jailhouse that her family calls home, along with their children, and she's moved in with her mother. Constance feels incredible guilt for all of this. After all, it was her fault that von Matthiasis got away. The only way she can make things right again is to catch the Baron. And it seems he's taken the bait. Chapter 12 of Lady Cop Makes Trouble. If I'd been told, only a month or two earlier, that I would be responsible for an escaped prisoner, criminal charges being filed against the sheriff, the dissolution of his marriage, and several guards and deputies at risk of losing their places, I might have never left the house again. In one careless moment, I had set into motion a carnival of disasters, each more spectacular than the last. I couldn't bear it. I wondered how any of our inmates managed the weight of their own regrets. Some of them regretted nothing, or claimed to, but surely a few of them sat in their cells and let their misdeeds gnaw away at them as mine did. But unlike our inmates, I was free and at liberty to do something about my troubles. All day I paced and fretted over that letter. Sheriff Heath had put the worst man on the case and seemed not to know it. I had misgivings about English all along, and not just because of his treatment of me. He was arrogant and careless and dismissive of the sheriff's ideas. I didn't trust him to do the job, and I knew that if the messenger got away, we wouldn't have another chance. The fact that I had already failed at guard duty, catastrophically, no less, didn't enter into my way of thinking about it. If there was a man to be caught, I would catch him. I had no doubt about that. I also knew that if I'd done as Sheriff Heath asked and stayed in my place, I never would have captured Felix. It occurred to me that listening to Sheriff Heath might not be the best way to capture a man. That night, after supper and lights out, I told the guards I was going home. But instead, I marched right through downtown and over to Reverend Weber's church. I found Deputy English crouching between two overgrown shrubs behind the rectory. When he saw me, he jumped and raised a finger to his lips. "I'm taking your place," I whispered. Deputy English squinted at me, his face nothing but a long, dark shadow.
"You couldn't possibly. Go on away from here before you frighten the messenger boy."
I looked around and saw no other place to hide. He'd taken the only available shrub. How was I to make him leave? I said the only thing that came to me. "Sheriff Heath sent me to take the night shift. You're to go home."
"You're lying."
I was lying, but I took offense at the accusation anyway. "I'm to relieve you, and if you won't let me, I'll have no choice but to go back to the jail and return with the sheriff, who has better things to do than explain his decisions to you." In the dark, I could make out a row of white teeth. Deputy English had a mean-spirited grin that was always more of a threat than a smile.
"Even Sheriff Heath isn't so boneheaded as to put you in charge of this. Someone might have to make an arrest tonight. Are you expecting the old minister to do it?"
"Have you forgotten that I made the only arrest in this case?" I showed him the revolver in my pocket and the handcuffs looped to my skirt just under my coat.
"You can stay here and wait for the messenger, Miss Cop. The sheriff sent me in a motor car. But there's no reason to leave that for you, is there?"
He knew I couldn't drive. I'd assume the messenger would arrive by train. But with a sinking feeling, it came to me that he could, of course, come in an auto, and I'd have no way of following him.
And I'll stop at the jail on my way home to let the sheriff know how good it was of him to send a replacement for the night. How does that sound?
That didn't sound very good to me. It wouldn't take English any time at all to get back to the jail. Sheriff Heath could be here within the hour. I let myself be propelled by rage and frustration and hadn't thought about what would happen if the sheriff found out I was here before the messenger arrived. But I saw nothing to do but stand my ground.
Go and tell him. It doesn't matter.
He paused for just a second longer, so close that I could feel his breath on me, and then he turned abruptly and walked away, his hands in his pockets, whistling a little melody. A few minutes later, I heard his engine fire and rumble down the street. I stood listening to a train whistle off in the distance and to the shuffling of leaves in the trees in the little graveyard behind the church. After just a few minutes, my fingers were numb, and I was fighting the urge to stamp my feet against the cold. In the solitary dark, my sense of outrage dissipated, and I wondered if the sheriff had been right. This siege could go on for days. How long did I think I'd last? I couldn't stay outside all night. I knew that. I tapped quietly on the rectory door, and Reverend Weber opened it just wide enough to look at me.
"I'll be inside the church," I said.
"Is there a door to the rectory in there?" He nodded.
"Keep it unlocked."
He twisted himself around to meet my eyes. His arm wobbled atop his cane in such a way that his whole body shook.
"Gute Nacht,"
he said, and closed the door gently in my face. The poor man had agreed only to write a letter. He never agreed to this. Inside the church, I pulled a chair over to the rectory door. I opened it to check that it was unlocked and peeked through a small passageway to the sitting room where the reverend sat alone. Then I removed my hat so I could lean against the wall and listen for any sound on the other side of the door. After a few minutes, I opened it just once more and reminded the reverend to speak clearly but not too loudly so that it would raise suspicion. He waved his hand at me wearily. Over the next few hours, there was no sound but the faint tick of my watch and the sighs and moans issuing forth from the old man as he shifted in his chair on the other side of the door and tried to stay awake. He kept a light on. I heard him shuffling the pages of a newspaper. Outside, the branches of an elm tree creaked when the wind picked up. Twice, I heard a man whistle as he walked by. To keep myself alert, I paced the length of the church and stood at the high and narrow window looking out at the darkened neighborhood. The warm lights in the houses grew dim one after another, the neighbors either falling into untroubled sleep or sitting up with their predicaments as I was. It was nearly midnight when I heard the scrape of the church door and jumped to my feet. Sheriff Heath walked noiselessly up to me, took me roughly by the elbow, and pulled me through the pews to the other side of the room, as far from the rectory door as we could be. "I won't tolerate this." He wouldn't even look at me. He was my prisoner. I should be the one to bring him in. I said it, even though I no longer quite believed it myself.
"Damn it, you don't even figure into it. My wife is at her mother's over this. I've got a lawyer trying to keep me out of jail."
He did blame me. Of course he did. I had the sensation of falling to the floor, but somehow I was still standing, frozen, mute.
"Bergen County won't see another lady deputy for years because of this mess, and they probably won't see another Democratic sheriff either. Try to think about someone other than yourself, Miss Cop, and don't ever tell one of my deputies what to do."
He would have sent me home at that very moment, or at least he would have tried, but through the rectory door, we heard the reverend call out,
"I'm coming!"
the old man shouted, in exactly the sort of desperate, overly loud voice I'd warned him about. We both rushed to the door to listen. I caught a glimpse of a dark figure through the window. From his shape, I could tell it wasn't Von Mathesis. He was shorter and rounder, and he had the voice of a Brooklyn-born boy.
"You got a package for me?" he said when the Reverend opened the door.
"Yes, please come in."
He persisted in using that booming voice, which must have been the way he delivered his sermons. I cringed and held my breath. Sheriff Heath had his hand on the door.
Are you a friend of Dr. Von Mathesis?
Sure, the boy said.
And your name?
The Messenger Boy.
I didn't catch that.
Something was knocked over or kicked around, and the boy said,
Where is it?
What's that?
The package, the envelope, the bag, whatever you have. Go and get it.
The Reverend mumbled his answer and shuffled around the room. Something slid across the floor, and then came the sound of a club striking the wall.
Why'd you do that?
To get you moving. You're the one who sent for me. Now where the devil is the money?
I had the uncomfortable impression that the Reverend was stalling on my account. He was supposed to hand the envelope over and let the man go. Keeping him there was of no help to us. The sheriff pulled his revolver and held it down at his side. I did the same.
I thought I put your money right here. Let me look, mister. What did you say your name was?
Now the club landed somewhere else, and something, a lamp, a mirror, shattered. If the Reverend didn't stop this nonsense, we'd have to run in and ruin the whole operation.
Here you are. No, go!
The club thundered again, and then came the sound I'd been dreading, a strong, solid fist landing a punch on the old man. He must have fallen and knocked over a chair, because there was a clatter and a moan, and the boy ran out the door and down the street.
Stay with him, Sheriff Heath told me, and went in chase of the messenger.
It took everything in me not to run after him. Inside the rectory, the Reverend was in a heap on the floor and bleeding from a cut on his forehead, but he was alive and already struggling to stand. I pressed my handkerchief against his head and helped him into a chair.
Gehen Sie.
It meant go on. I told him that I had to stay with him. He waved me out. The door stood open, a gaping black hole that led away from the church, away from Hackensack, away to wherever Von Mathesis was hiding. A wind picked up and rattled the door a little, and a few orange leaves flew inside. It was impossible to resist. I slammed the door behind me and ran down the street after Sheriff Heath. The boy was boarding a train for New York by the time I stumbled, wheezing and red-faced, into the station. Sheriff Heath stood in the doorway to the ticket office with his back to me, talking in a low voice to the station agent, the two of them framed in the orange light of a single lantern. The messenger seemed not to have noticed him. I stayed out of the way and watched the sheriff step into the car after the boy had boarded. When the whistle sounded, I climbed to the platform and hopped aboard the following car just before the train started to move. There were only a few sleepy travelers on board. If I stood at the front, I could just see through the window into the car beyond, where Sheriff Heath and the messenger had their backs turned. In this way, I watched the two of them unnoticed as the train rattled into the city. In New York, I got off behind them and trailed them out of the station and onto 7th Avenue. Even at this late hour, there were people about, and hacks looking for fares and porters carrying trunks. The weak light of a few lampposts was all we had to see by. It would be easy to lose the boy. There were plenty more like him, solitary figures in dark coats rushing away from the station. When I came up alongside Sheriff Heath, he didn't turn to look at me, but spoke quietly out of the corner of his mouth. Deputies generally do what the sheriff tells them, or they find themselves in another line of work. If I can't catch him, I don't deserve any line of work. He snorted at that and broke into a run to keep up with the boy. I matched his pace. We slowed when we were about half a block behind him. He took the most indirect and meandering route through the city he could have possibly contrived, sticking to narrow streets where the shops had all been shuttered for hours, where wide, faceless buildings held box factories and printing presses by day, but looked entirely abandoned by night. He never stopped or slowed down. More than once he crossed in the middle of an avenue without any regard for the drivers of motor cars and carriages who couldn't see 10 feet in front of them, forcing us to chase after him and risk our own limbs. It was too hurried a pace for conversation, but the sheriff kept trying to wave me away, and I kept ignoring him. The boy crossed Fifth Avenue and made his way into the slums on the east side of town. There were young men huddled in tight knots on the corners, rubbing their hands together over the meager spark of an ash can, and girls in moth-eaten coats shivering in doorways. The sidewalks were so uneven and riddled with broken and half-open cellar doors that I had to lift my skirts to see where I was stepping. At last, the boy stepped into a doorway down on Second Avenue and felt around in his pockets for a key. Sheriff Heath pulled me into a darkened window of a Polish bakery a few doors away. He kept me so close that I could feel his mustache against my ear.
"It's your fault if he runs. Catch him, no matter what."
"Of course," I said. But he looked desperate and uncertain as he let go of me and ran noiselessly across the street. The boy fumbled with his keys and finally pushed one into the lock. The sheriff stole up behind him, took hold of the door, and pushed in after him. I couldn't see the boy's reaction, but I heard a scuffle and crept closer. Sheriff Heath mumbled something I couldn't hear, and the boy yelled, and one of them hit the other. I ran up to the door, which had drifted closed but not caught, and opened it in time to see the sheriff pulling the boy's hands behind his back and putting handcuffs on him. They were both on their knees in the narrow hallway. Sheriff Heath staggered to his feet and pulled the boy up with him. The sheriff looked over at me and jerked his head for me to step inside and close the door. "Not a word," he said to the boy. "Just nod, yes or no. Any sound, and I'll make it worse for you." The boy nodded. He was turned away from me. I had a feeling that Sheriff Heath didn't want him to see me. Maybe the boy would be more frightened if he thought there were no witnesses. He stood behind the boy, keeping hold of the handcuffs, and spoke quietly in his ear.
"Is Dr. von Matthäus upstairs?"
The boy shook his head no.
"Has he been staying here?"
He nodded yes.
"Then who are we going to see? Just say it real quiet. Don't wake anybody up."
"Rudy Schilga."
"Rudy. Rudolph. Guess so."
"Apartment."
"What?"
The boy tried to turn around again, and Sheriff Heath gave him a little shove forward.
"What apartment? Where are we going?"
Oh, 3A.
With that, they began to climb the stairs, the boy in front and the sheriff right behind him, still holding him by the cuffs. At the top of the first flight, the sheriff leaned down from the landing and waved me up. I climbed as quietly as I could and stayed out of sight. On the third floor, they stopped in front of 3R. The boy didn't say a word. He kept his head down and panted from the exertion of the climb.
"Key?" Sheriff Heath whispered.
"In my coat."
The sheriff reached around and pulled it out of his pocket. He turned the key and pushed the boy inside. I stepped in behind them and closed the door. The place was empty. It was an ordinary tenement flat, with a bathtub in the kitchen and 2 bare iron beds against the wall.
There was a shelf holding cups and saucers and a battered tin pan. Apart from these few furnishings, there was no sign that anyone lived there. It smelled of dust and grime. At the sound of the door closing, the boy turned sharply and jumped when he saw me. "Who is she?"
"Keep your voice down, Sheriff," he said. "This is Miss Kopp. What's your name, son?"
"Reinhold Dietz." It was a German name. I wouldn't have any trouble remembering. Reinhold kept his eyes on me. He had a round, doughy face and blank, nickel-blue eyes. "I got followed, didn't I?" he said. "Rudy told me to watch for police, but he didn't say nothing about a lady." Sheriff Heath yanked his handcuffs and turned him away from me.
"What's the plan, son?"
"Am I going to jail?" The sheriff paused and looked down at him, taking in his navy coat with holes at the elbows and a pair of old shoes that were starting to split at the soles and leak newspaper stuffing.
"That depends on you."
In the room next door, a man succumbed to a tubercular coughing fit. His steps fell heavily across the floor, and there was the sound of water being poured from a pitcher. We waited in silence until he settled down, and then the sheriff said,
"Reinhold, I'll let you go the minute I get Von Matthäus's. When I put the cuffs on him, I'll take them off you. It'll be just like that."
Reinhold kept his head down. "Rudy said if he wasn't here to meet him, go meet the Baron at the ferry building."
"What ferry?"
"East River, 23rd Street."
"When?"
"Now. I should be there by now." That was all the urging Sheriff Heath required.
Reinhold gave a discouraged moan, but went along without a fight.
This time, we took a more direct route up 23rd Street and over to the ferry building. If it was unusual for a woman and a man to lead a boy along in handcuffs in the quiet hours after midnight, I wouldn't have known it. No one who passed us gave us a second look. Reinhold panted noisily as we walked, with great puffs of steam coming from his mouth in the cold. The handcuffs seemed to throw him off balance, and he kept stumbling against us. I thought about telling the sheriff that we should unchain him, but I knew that he was in no mood to make things comfortable for Reinhold, so we stomped along, heading east on 23rd until the ferry building came into sight under the ruddy glow of the street lamps. As we approached, Sheriff Heath said to Reinhold,
"Does Von Matthäus know you? Does he know what you look like?"
"He knows me."
"Well, he knows us, too. Here's what I'm going to do. I'll find a nice, comfortable bench and chain you to it. Miss Kopp and I'll be nearby, even if you don't see us. If you call out any kind of warning to him, you're coming back to Hackensack for a nice long stay in my jail. As soon as we get him, I'll let you go."
"Agreed?" Reinhold coughed and nodded.
"Suppose so."
"That's fine. Miss Kopp, go take a walk. See if he's here. Try to stay inside of us. After I get our friends settled, I'll come find you."
I ran off without a word. There was a walkway of wooden planks around the edge of the ferry building, and when the heel of my boot struck a loose board, the sound rang out like a gunshot. I dashed under a canvas awning near the ticket window in a deep shadow, hoping that Von Matthäus hadn't spotted me. But there was no sign of him, or any other man expecting a rendezvous. There were only the men hauling buckets of water out of the river and washing down the docks, coiling enormous ropes around their posts and cinching gangplanks into place. A few of them looked up at me, but didn't say anything. Across the way, Sheriff Heath had Reinhold on a bench and was kneeling in front of him, locking him to it. I saw him take Reinhold's face in his hands and speak to him. Reinhold nodded vigorously and Sheriff Heath stepped away. The boy arranged himself so that it looked like he was just sitting casually, not chained to the bench. Sheriff Heath disappeared behind the ferry building. I stayed at my post at the far end, where I had a clear view of Reinhold and would see if anyone approached him from the street side. It wasn't until I was standing still that I began to feel the biting cold that blew in off the river. In spite of my gloves, the blood had drained from my fingers, and I had to rub them together to get the feeling back. My feet were just as frozen, but I didn't dare stomp around and make too much noise. Reinhold Dietz sat perfectly still on the bench with his chin down against his chest. He might have fallen asleep, although I couldn't tell from this distance. I was worried about leaving him for too long in the cold. I paced back and forth simply as a matter of survival and couldn't believe that Reinhold could tolerate sitting still for much longer in his thin coat. Finally, Sheriff Heath emerged at the opposite end of the ferry building and stood out in a little pool of light cast by a lone street lamp. He raised his palms up to show that he'd found nothing, and I did the same. Reinhold lifted his head long enough to look at each of us and dropped it again. Sheriff Heath crossed to me.
"We're going back to the apartment," the sheriff said. "Reinhold said that Von Matthäus is never late. If he hasn't shown by now, he isn't going to. No point in wasting around here in the cold."
I hated to leave the only place our fugitive might be expected to turn up.
"I'll stay here," I said. "You two go back."
Sheriff Heath squinted at me.
"Is that your punishment? You're going to stand out all night in the cold?"
"Would that take care of it?"
He rolled his eyes. "There's another meeting set up for tomorrow at the subway station. We'll get him there. This way, Miss Cop."
He had Reinhold Dietz by one elbow and took me by the other elbow.
"Why don't you call her a deputy if she works for you?" Reinhold asked as we hurried back to the flat.
"Deputies follow orders given to them by the sheriff. That is the sole purpose of a deputy. People who don't follow the sheriff's orders are more commonly referred to as..."
He paused here as we navigated a tricky intersection along 23rd, and Reinhold offered a suggestion.
"Outlaws?"
Sheriff Heath fought back a smile as he pulled us down the street.
"Thank you, Mr. Dietz. Outlaw is exactly right."
I'm Michelle Good, and I've been reading from Lady Cop Makes Trouble by Amy Stewart, published by Mariner Books in 2017. And I'll read from it again next time on Chapter a Day.